So today, I'd like to talk about the present moment. Sometimes when we practice, we sit there and we pay attention to our breathing. We just come back to our breathing over and over and over again. And we wonder, why am I doing this? What does this have to do with anything? So I just like to explore that a little bit today from a couple of different angles. And actually on Saturday, I'm going to explore it from even a different angle. So one of the reasons a lot of us do this, coming back to the breath over and over again, is that it develops concentration. It feels good. As we come back to the breath, as we let go of our stream of thoughts, the mind collects and settles, and it simply feels good to be in that space of stillness and quietness. Part of the reason it feels good is because we've let go of some of our reactivity in the process of coming back. So one of the things we start to see as we simply just come back to the present moment or to a particular object in the present moment, to the breath, is that a lot of our difficulties in life have to do with the way we react to things. We see that things are actually okay if we are just calmly sitting here looking at our breath. There's no particular problem while we're just sitting here looking at our breath. So we start to see that a lot of our difficulties in life come from our reactivity to our experience, to our thoughts, to our emotions. So we start to see that as we come back and simply try to become concentrated. So part of the practice, part of becoming concentrated, part of this just coming back over and over again, is actually to just begin to see the reactivity of our minds and how it relates to our difficulties in our life. It's not an accident, it's not a mistake that when we sit down, we see what's hard, we see how our mind reacts. It's actually part of the process. It's part of learning about ourselves and learning about our minds. So we witness our reactivity. We see how it's connected to our suffering. We very directly witness our dissatisfaction, our discomfort. We see the first noble truth in this very moment. And we also start to see the letting go. Just simply saying, I'm just going to come back to the breath. I see this reactivity, I'm just going to come back to the breath. We start to cultivate a practice of letting go, of seeing that we can let go. We see that the reactivity is not so skillful, and there's a kind of a natural sense of, well, maybe I don't particularly want to go there. And we come back because it feels more skillful to let go of the reactivity. And we also let go because we start to see the benefits of stillness, of peace, of the quiet, of just being present. As we come back to the present moment, we're cultivating mindfulness. Also, and mindfulness has this kind of magic quality. One good definition of mindfulness is to be non-reactively present, to be non-reactively aware of what is happening while it is happening. So there's that quality of non-reactivity, of presence, and of being present. Of being aware while something is happening. And this quality of mindfulness itself, it has some kind of magic properties. It seems magic, actually, while it's happening. I think it's probably very natural and normal. But the quality of mindfulness has this property that if we pay attention to things that are skillful, to joy, happiness, equanimity, tranquility, generosity. If we bring our mindfulness to those qualities of mind, it creates the causes and conditions for them to appear more often in our lives. And And as we bring our mindful attention to unskillful qualities, to greed, to aversion, to fear, to reactivity, to hatred, to ill will, as we bring our mindful attention to those qualities, it creates the causes and conditions for them to appear less often. This is a great benefit of mindfulness. It's like a win-win situation. We pay attention to the skillful things and they tend to increase. As we pay attention to the unskillful things, they tend to decrease. My understanding of why this happens is because, in particular, as we pay attention to the unskillful things, to the greed, to the clinging, to the aversion, we really witness how painful it is in our own mind and body, right in that moment. And in that witnessing of that pain, the mind simply realizes it doesn't need to do that anymore. It says, this is not necessary. So it almost happens by itself, this letting go of the unskillful, when we actually witness the pain that's associated with it. So another reason to come back to the present moment is because it's the only thing there is. I mean, we think that there's a past. We have this idea that there's a past, and we have all of these memories and thoughts and recollections about the past, and we make it into a thing. It seems like it's really there. But what is it? What's happening? There's a thought in the present moment about the past. So the past is a construct in the present moment. The same thing with the future. If we're projecting into the future, thinking about what we're going to do tomorrow, who we're going to see next week, what the vacation we're going to be taking, it's all in our minds. It's a thought happening right now. It's a fantasy, a thought, an idea that's happening right now in the present moment. I like to remember something that I heard Ajahn Amaro say once. He said, you know, sometimes when we think about bringing our attention to the present moment, it feels like we're narrowing things. It just feels like we're paying attention to something very small. He said, but as you start to pay attention to the present moment, you see that the present moment contains the past. It contains the future. It's everything. It's all there is. And the present moment gets really big. So if we're not mindful of the present moment, we'll miss our lives. And even sometimes if we're paying attention in the present moment itself, we're thinking about the present moment as opposed to actually experiencing it. So there's a way in which we can sort of be present in the present moment, but not really mindful. I had an experience of this on a retreat once where I was sitting in a dining hall. And I was kind of present. I was, you know, there and, you know, sort of thinking. And I saw somebody walk into the room, into the dining room. And I saw them do some things. And then I saw them walk out. And then I saw a second person walk into the dining room. And I saw them do some things. And I saw them walk out. And after the second person left the dining room, I kind of came into presence. And I realized that I could remember everything that had happened. I could remember what the two people had done. But I hadn't really been present moment to moment there while they were there. It was the recollection. I could remember what had happened. So there had been some mindfulness. There had been some awareness, I'll say. There had been awareness happening. But the awareness of it was not concurrent with what was actually happening. So it became very clear to me. It's like, wow, it's like there's two kinds of things happening. You know, there's just an awareness that's going on all the time. And then there's the consciousness of that. There's really, really knowing that you're present while it's happening. Another way to think about mindfulness is, waking up to the awareness that's already happening. It's very simple. The present moment is also the only place we have a choice. We have a possibility in the present moment of actually having some input into the lives, the direction our lives will take. It's the only place we have this choice. It's the only place we have this input. We can think about the future and project into the future and think about what we might be doing and potentially use that as feedback, as guidance potentially for making a choice. But the only place we can choose to do anything is right now, right here. So if we're not present to make these choices, our habitual tendencies, our habits of mind will do it for us. These moments of choice happen all the time. They happen every time we move, every time we speak, every time we even think. There are these moments of intention, of choice, of movement to act. And when we don't see them, when we don't see that movement, what takes over in that moment is our habitual tendencies, our patterns, the ways that we have chosen in the past. It's just the normal process that the habits, the ways we've chosen in the past tend to be the way we choose in the present moment. So I like to make things as practical as possible. So I'd like to offer a couple of ways that you can start to look at this in your lives. So one of the ways, a really good way to just begin looking at this, is in meditation practice. You could try making a resolve to not move for a period of time. And the point of this resolve is not to simply sit perfectly still, but to witness what happens in the mind as the urge to move comes up. Because you can see that urge to move before you move. It's an event that happens that you can witness. So you can start to look at this in your meditation practice, and it's a really good place to start to look at it because you've kind of got this commitment to stillness. And if you make a resolve for stillness, just sit there. At some point there may be an urge to scratch an itch. And if you just sit there, you can notice the wanting to scratch the itch. You can notice the intention to move, that kind of movement, that urge to move. And what does that feel like? What happens to it as you watch it? Does it last forever? Probably not. Nothing does. So that's one way that you can experiment with it. Another way, in the formal meditation practice itself, is in walking meditation. This was one of the earliest ways that I began to see this quality, is that at the end of the walking path, the walking meditation, just in case some of you haven't done this before, you stand still and you pick a path of a certain length and you start to walk, noticing all the movements of walking as you go, and at the end of the path you stop. And then you turn around, and then you walk back. So it's very simple, just back and forth walking. And the practice of stopping at each point, at the end of each path, stop, turn, stop, move. That those moments of stopping give you the opportunity again to see the intention to move. So walk to the end of the path, stop. There will be some point at which there's the intention to turn. And you can notice that. If you just stand there, you can notice that intention to turn. You can notice the intention to start to walk again. You can also notice this in your life. If you just take a moment as you're changing postures between activities, if you're sitting down at your meal, When you've finished your meal, before you get up, see if you can notice that you're going to get up before you get up. Just that simply. Just notice you're going to get up before you get up. It's very obvious once you start to pay attention to it. Another good place to practice with this is in speech. So if you have a friend you can practice with, it's a little bit easier if you do it with a friend who knows what you're doing. Just pause for a moment before you speak. Know that you're going to speak before you speak. Just know that. Just know that. Starting small is helpful with these little things, because we have to train our minds to do this. The habitual tendencies of our life are so strong that they often just sweep us through the present moment without our awareness of it. So starting small in these ways is helpful. And also, it's also very instructive, because often in seeing the small ways in which we choose to do things, we uncover some of the larger patterns of our life. A lot of our habitual tendencies that play out in the large patterns in our life can be uncovered in the small movements. The desire to itch, you know, the movement to itch. There may be some motivation in there that is similar to something that triggers our larger motivations. Or maybe the way we get irritated when the alarm clock goes off in the morning, that that movement of mind is similar to other ways that we get irritated in larger ways in our lives. So looking at the small pieces in our life can really help us to uncover some of the larger patterns. Looking at this moment of choice, seeing this moment of movement of mind, of intention, we not only get to see the fact that something is going to happen, but we get to see often why it's going to happen. So we get to see the motivation as well, the motivation behind what we're going to do. And this allows us to have some kind of a choice in whether we want to act on a particular motivation. So, for example, in the exercises that I was talking about, keeping yourself still while meditating, if you just pay attention to the urge to move, if you need to scratch an itch, I mean, most people wouldn't even think about the intention or the motivation behind it. It's just an itch. Of course, you scratch it. What kind of motivation do I need to scratch an itch? But there is a motivation. And it may be different for different of us. It may have something to do with not liking the itch, with maybe even hating the itch, really being very annoyed with the itch. So there is some kind of a motivation. It's not simply something that just happens. It happens because there's an intention, there's a motivation to do it, and there's an intention to follow through on that motivation. In speech, if we pause before we speak, we can see many, many reasons why we're going to speak. One of the great benefits of pausing before we speak is that we get to see, first of all, that we're going to speak, and second of all, we usually get to see what we're going to say before we actually say it. And I'm sure most of us have the experience of wishing we hadn't said something. And if we have that moment where we can see what we're going to say before we say it, we can see the motivation behind why we're going to say something, we potentially have that moment to choose and say, well, gee, do I really want to say this thing? Am I going to regret that? Am I going to wish I hadn't said that? So we've got that moment where we can witness that intention, that movement of mind, and the motivation behind it. There's so many reasons why we might say something. We might say something to help someone. We might say something to to hurt someone. I mean, there's many, many reasons. We might say something to impress someone so that they think we're a good person. So we can start to see these motivations. We get to decide, we get to see what the motivations are, and we can decide whether we really want to act on them. If we can see the motivation is skillful, motivated by compassion or generosity or love, we can also rejoice in that noticing itself. Often we may be motivated by those kinds of things and not actually see them, not actually witness the wholesomeness and the skillfulness of those actions. It's very skillful to bring mindfulness to these qualities because, as I said earlier, it tends to create the conditions for them to arise more if we actually are present for them. We can choose not to act on something unskillful. So these moments of motivation, intention, action, they happen millions of times during our day. It is every single moment. Every single moment there's that intention, the motivation, the intention, the action. And often we are simply not aware of them. It's impossible, actually. One of my teachers in Burma, he was really instructing me to pay attention to my intention, pay attention to every intention before every movement, before every action that you make. And he asked me one day, in a very kind of stern voice, "Are you seeing every single intention?" And I said, "No, there's no way that I can see them." And he just smiled and laughed and said, "There isn't any way. There is not any way to see all the intentions. There's too many of them. They're happening just every split second." But we can see the larger intentions, the ones before we speak, before we actually physically act. Those are actually very witnessable. And those are the ones that tend to get us in trouble. This is one of the greatest powers of being present, this being able to witness this moment of choice. I had a very strong experience of this pretty early in my practice. I was paying attention to anger. It was pretty much the reason I got into the practice, was because anger was really sweeping me away. So I had been paying attention to the anger for quite a while and noticing how painful it was, really, really experiencing the suffering of the anger itself. I could see that I kind of had this idea that if I was angry, it would somehow hurt the person I was angry at. But I really began to experience the pain of the anger in my own being, and that it actually wasn't hurting him at all because he was 7,000 miles away. There wasn't any way that it was really hurting him. So I was really experiencing very deeply the suffering of that anger. And one day, and this is, you know, just practicing through my day, I was really bringing my attention to the anger during my daily life. And one day I was standing in my kitchen and I was cutting an apple. And I noticed a thought appear in my mind. And the thought was related to this person I was angry at. It was an image of being with him at a fruit stand in Sacramento. So I could see there was a connection between the memory and the apple that I was cutting. And I also noticed that I wasn't angry at that instant when that thought arose in my mind. But I could see there was this urge, this just movement to jump on that thought and get angry. There was this kind of, you know, impelling movement behind my mind that said, "Oh, it's time to get angry with him again." And because I had spent so much time in the place of seeing how much suffering was involved in that anger, I saw in that moment, I saw that I had a choice. I didn't have to jump on that thought. And I just stood there. I didn't jump on the thought. I noticed there was this moment. And I stood there kind of waiting to get angry, because That's what I thought was going to happen. I mean, I thought I had noticed this thing. I had noticed this. I saw that I had the choice, but I didn't really think I could act on that choice. I mean, it wasn't something that I thought I could just say, I'm not going to go there. I thought that would, you know, just kind of suppress it. But it did not come up. The anger just did not come. And in that moment, there was just an incredible sense of gratitude for the power of mindfulness, for the ability of the mind to see these very subtle thoughts. That thought was just a fleeting image in the mind. And I had witnessed that the tendency to react to that thought was what would lead me into the anger. And the mind just did not go there. It just said, don't need to do that. So really, actually, it seemed like, to some extent, it was a choice. I mean, to some extent, the bringing the mindfulness to that appearance of that thought, there was the awareness that there was the choice to not get angry. But really, I think it let go of itself, that because I had spent so much time in the space of seeing how much suffering was caused by that anger, the mind simply dropped it like it would drop a hot potato. It said, no, not going to do that. And it was very powerful to witness that and to really see that power of choice, the power of mindfulness. I was quite blown away by that I could actually see that kind of thing. But with all of this attention on the present moment and on looking at our power of choice and the ability to be present, we have to take care not to have an agenda we have to recognize that the results are out of our control. There's all of these different causes and conditions that come together in our lives. If you just stop and think for a moment, what it took you to get here? What are all the different things that happened for you to come here? It gives you a sense of kind of the vastness of the web of causes and conditions that come together. I mean, there are probably things that happened 3 or 4 years ago that contributed to your coming here today. So the web of causes and conditions is vast. And as we make an action, put an action into that web of causes and conditions, we really cannot control how that particular action is going to affect that network, that web. So we have to let go of the results of our actions. We can take refuge in our intention. We can take refuge in the skillfulness of our intention. But then we have to let go of what's actually going to happen. We can't control how people are going to react to what we say. They've got their own network of causes and conditions coming to meet that moment. We can't control how the environment is going to respond to our actions. A simple choice of turning left or turning right that's very neutral may mean our life or our death. We really just don't know what is going to happen. One thing I like to reflect on, the Dalai Lama was asked at one point how he held all of the different things that had happened based on some of his choices. And there are many, many people that have died. And maybe some of them had to do with his choices, maybe them others were not. And he responded, my skillful intention is my protection. My skillful intention is my protection. So really, we lose our lives if we're not present. Be here for your life. So those are my thoughts on intention and choice in the present moment. On Saturday, I'm going to talk about this subject of present moment from the point of view of insight and freedom. How bringing our attention to the present moment actually can free us. So are there any thoughts or comments? Anything you'd like to share? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah. I have a question.
Okay.
In the beginning of the talk, you were using the word reactivity a lot. And I sort of know what it means, but I'd like to hear you say what you mean when you say it or say a little more about it.
Okay. So what I mean is that there's basically kind of a bare set of input that comes into our experience. You know, there's contact, there's touch, there's sound, there's smells, there's tastes. There's all of that kind of bare input that comes in. And it's got a kind of a quality to it. It's either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And what seems to happen is that we take that experience in, there's the recognition of whether it's pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. And then there's a movement of mind, very basic, almost like, you know, Gill uses the amoeba as an example of this kind of movement, towards something that's pleasant and away from something that's unpleasant, and usually to not even notice something that's neutral. So there's that movement of to the pleasant, away from the unpleasant. And that very quickly moves into wanting the pleasant, not wanting the unpleasant. There's a kind of a gradation in the middle when there's the pleasant and unpleasant. There's the liking the pleasant, not liking the unpleasant. Then there's the wanting that comes after that, the either wanting it to be there or wanting it to go away. That's the birth of the reactivity, that movement of wanting something, wanting to have something, or wanting to push something away. And that's just the very basic stages. You know, we build reactivity on top of reactivity. If you cut yourself with a knife, if you cut yourself, there's just the bare sensation of the pain, and that's what the body's designed to do. You know, it's designed to produce pain when it gets injured. So there's that bare experience of pain, and it's unpleasant. There's no way around that. It's unpleasant. And then there is the reactivity behind that. There's the, how could I have been so stupid not to notice where the knife was going to slip? I haven't got time to go to the hospital right now because I've got other things to do. And then we maybe we notice this, that we're getting reactive, and then we get angry with ourselves because we're reactive, and then we hate ourselves because we're angry, and then we get frustrated because we hate ourselves, and it just kind of builds, you know, on top of each other. So there's kind of a cycle that happens, but it comes back to this just bare experience and the fact that it's pleasant or unpleasant and that we move in relationship to that. Yeah, Nick.
I don't think I got the full meaning that you were wanting to convey with regard to when you were apparently in Burma in the eating hall and a couple people came in and so on. And I thought you were going to go on and say, I realized that I was aware of them and I could repeat in my memory what I saw, but I realized I was also thinking of the next Dharma talk or something, mm-hmm. like I am when driving a car, split attention.
Right.
But you didn't say that. You said something about the distinction between awareness and mindful awareness, and I don't think I got the distinction.
Okay, so there's kind of an awareness that's going on all the time that kind of takes everything in. And you know, so when I was sitting there thinking about these other things, the awareness took in the fact that these people had walked into the room.
Oh, you were thinking about other things.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
yes.
Then I understood. Okay.
I'm sorry.
You say that. I just missed that.
Yeah.
So it was some kind of split attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Good.
Okay.
I understand that.
Any other comments or
Thank you so much, because this is what I needed to hear, I think. I usually don't come because I live far. Well, for me, it's far. But I am right in the middle of that situation where I tend to react to things that are unfair. It's actually an unfair situation. But I'm aware, and I tell myself I am reacting, and I try to breathe, but it's a reminder of some things that have happened to me before, and it's the anger swells up, and it's affecting my blood pressure and affecting me, like you said, tremendously. And I am sort of tied to that situation right now, and I tend to, the reaction is there. It's just very harsh to the pain, you know, it's just in the situation. I just don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to work. I mean, if you can bring mindfulness and awareness to that reactivity, it's skillful to do that. And you will, as I said, start to witness the suffering in your own being around it. But sometimes, and when I was working with that anger I was talking about, I worked with that anger over the space of years. It didn't simply go away, you know, with seeing the apple image, you know. That was the beginning of really committing myself to, wow, this is worth doing. This is really something that's worth paying attention to and worth. There was a recognition that, yes, this is what I should do. This is how I should be with this. But there were also a number of times when I noticed that as I was bringing my attention to the anger, that it seemed at times that the power of the anger was actually stronger than the power of the mindfulness, that the power of the reactivity was stronger than the power of the mindfulness. And it almost seemed that if I was in that situation and I tried to bring the mindfulness into it, that the reactivity co-opted the mindfulness and just, you know, spun me into more difficulty. So what I learned to do in that kind of a situation, when I was noticing that trying to bring mindfulness to something where the reactivity was actually stronger, was to actually have some compassion and notice, well, maybe bringing mindfulness to that reaction is not what's so skillful right now. And what I chose to do was to direct my attention. When I saw that kind of thing happening, when I see the anger come up, it's like, okay, I see you, anger, but, you know, this is not the time to pay attention to it directly because the mindfulness needs to get a little stronger. So I kind of made a bargain with myself. When my mindfulness is stronger, I'll start to pay attention to the anger. But not now. Not now. So it's very calm putting it aside, putting aside the attention. Not putting aside the anger, but putting aside the attention to the anger and directing my attention somewhere else. There's many things going on in the present moment. You know, there's the sensation of your butt on the cushion. There's the feet on the ground. So for some reason, for me, a lot of times this reactivity happened when I was walking. So when I would notice it and I'd notice that movement of, you know, trying to pay attention to it and seeing, well, you know, probably not a good time to do this right now, I'd just direct my attention to my feet. Just take my attention to something really neutral. And over the course of years, that simple movement of just letting go of the anger and bringing my attention to something neutral actually had the effect of having it let go. I didn't actually ever have to come back and bring my attention directly to the mindfulness in a very intensive way. The simple movement of just recognizing the anger and saying, not now, coming to something neutral. Over the course of years, very slowly, let it wind out. I kind of envisioned my anger almost as spooled up in my body, like on a spool of thread. And that each time a little bit, you know, each time some anger appeared, it'd be like a little bit of that spool of thread spooled out. And then the saying, not now, was like cutting it off and putting it aside, as opposed to winding it back up. And so over the course of years, it just all eventually came out. So that's another way to work, you know, to bring your attention to something neutral. If you find that that kind of reactivity, cultivate a neutral refuge, something, your hands, the breathing, something I find helpful away from the place where the feeling of reactivity is strong. You know, typically, often reactivity is in this area, you know, that there's kind of a tightness or heat or tension that happens in the torso. So I found that bringing my attention away from the torso, so not trying to pay attention to my breath in this area when that was happening, but maybe to the nostrils or hands or feet, something that was pretty far away. Hearing is a good one. Hearing is a really good one to take you out of the tension and tightness, if you can just bring your attention to sounds. So that can be helpful. Does that address anything?
Yeah, well, it has to do with work, but I suppose I leave this place right now, or it's a continuous, it's happening, and I'm thinking of ways how to work with this, and I think, well, I try to be mindful, but I'm too much in rage.
Yes.
So, because this is an act, excuse me, I have understood this is an act on purpose to do something, I'm not going to go into it. So I have understood that, and it might be temporary, maybe. I'm not sure. It's too involved, but it's the act of attack or the act of that for me is almost impossible to take.
Yes,
it's almost impossible to sit in subtle and open ways.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, the reactivity, part of the benefit of being with the reactivity is also if we can get to the place where we can see something a little deeper than the reactivity, it can help us to inform what choice we need to make around it. You know, if it is as big as having to leave the job, you know, is that really the right choice? We can really, it's most helpful to not try to answer that kind of a question out of rage. You know, to be able to come into a little bit of a quieter place where we can more get in touch with something a little less reactive, you know, so that we can see what is the skillful choice. You know, mindfulness doesn't mean that we just sit there and take everything. It really, you know, can help us to make skillful choices. That's what we're doing here, is observing that moment of intention so we can choose skillfully. You know, we can't just not do anything, but if we can choose to act out of compassion as opposed to hatred, You can make a choice to leave somebody who's attacking you out of compassion, or you can make that choice out of ill will. So it can be, it's just helpful to be able to witness that movement and to try to get to the place where there's not quite so much reactivity.
Thank you.
So thank you for your attention and your participation. May you make wise choices.